The new normal. Everyone wants to know what that's going to look like and what we can do to make sure it's better than the old normal. And Dr. Jamie Metzl is a technology futurist, geopolitical expert, writer, and a member of a WHO advisory committee on human genome editing. He describes the pandemic as a convergence of the worlds of science and biology and the world of geopolitics. Now, the organisation Think Inc. is hosting an online event on Sunday with Dr. Metzl to talk about humanity after the pandemic. It's called Hacking the Coronavirus, the Future of Our World. And we've got a link on our website if you'd like to attend that event. Dr. Jamie Metzl joins me now. Hello.
Hi.
Now, it's not like we didn't see this coming, right, after SARS and Ebola and the avian flu. So why was the world so ill-prepared for COVID-19?
You're exactly right. For years, for decades, we've been saying that there's a big global pandemic coming. And we've also been saying we could have a terrible nuclear accident. We've been saying the climate is being destroyed. And we've been saying that we're ruining our ecosystems and the oceans could collapse. So there's a big question and there's a little question. The big question is, why don't we solve any of these big global problems? And that is, there's a total mismatch between the global nature of the problems that face us and the national way that we've organized ourselves to do it. So we have a tragedy of the commons problem. And then in this narrow issue of these pandemics, we don't demobilize our military after each skirmish, but we'll ramp up to fight Ebola and SARS, and then we'll just go home. And it's just insane that we know that there are these big existential threats out there, and we haven't organized ourselves to do it. And this is a terrible crisis, but it's a total political failure. China failed in the beginning. We collectively failed to build the type of World Health Organization that could have ended this from the start. Certainly in the United States, we failed politically, and I'm in New York, and we're all suffering. So there's a lot of problems, and maybe we can unpack some of them together.
Yeah, President Donald Trump is threatening to cut funding to the World Health Organization. You describe this as the height of self-defeating lunacy. Is it just another example of our inability to take politics out of health?
Well, it certainly is an example. I mean, it's just a tragedy. New Zealand had the same information as the United States. Taiwan had the same information as the United States. And your countries actually did a pretty good job. So first and foremost, what Donald Trump is trying to do is just cover his own rear for one of the really the greatest screw-ups, leadership screw-ups in all of American history, and to divert the blame. And certainly the World Health Organization is not perfect, but we could have had, if we wanted to have an empowered, depoliticized World Health Organization, that's the World Health Organization that we should have built. That's not the way the World Health Organization is funded. It doesn't even have control over most of its own budget. And we stood by. We let China manipulate the WHO, force out Taiwan, which is just the height of insanity. And we collectively, we humans, we just need to get serious about this stuff. There are lives at stake, and we can't play politics with our most important institutions, whether it's the broader UN, the WHO, arms control, all of it.
What do you mean when you say the WHO doesn't have control of its own budget?
Most of its budget is earmarked by countries that say, we're giving you this money for this purpose, whatever that is. So if you just were to ask a regular sane person, and I know most people in New Zealand are sane, I've been there, and you're a lot saner these days than we are here in the United States. Wouldn't you want to have a World Health Organization that had a global surveillance network that was constantly gathering information? The second there was an indication of a pandemic, they had emergency response teams that would fly out in minutes like the Avengers. They'd go to wherever this breakout was. They'd set up an emergency response working with local authorities. If they could stop it there, great. If they couldn't, they would coordinate the countries of the world to have a concerted strategy for response. And then once this virus was defeated, they would be continually working to strengthen capacity all around the world. Everybody on Earth would say, yeah, we either they'd say, yeah, we need that, or They'd say, don't we already have that? And the answer is, we don't already have that because that's not the WHO that we've created. The budget of the WHO is way less than just the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. I mean, we've built this tiny, puny little entity that's doing, in many ways, the best it can, but we have to get serious about solving these big collective problems.
Now, you are part of a growing list of people who think that the virus was probably accidentally released from a lab in Wuhan.
Yes.
If true, is that sort of kind of unintended consequence, is that the sort of thing that makes people uncomfortable and suspicious of science? And if it's proven, I wonder how that will change how we move forward.
Well, I don't know about science, because certainly if you're suffering from this virus, you are relying on science to sequence the genome of this virus, which we were able to do very quickly because of science, to develop a vaccine, hopefully within a year or two, versus, you know, if our ancestors never, but even very recently, 10 or 20 years. And the way that you would do that, the smart way to prepare for what may be coming, would be to do what I believe the Chinese were trying to do at one of their two virology institutes in Wuhan, and that is you collect these viruses and then you study them. And that's what we do in the United States. You do it in New Zealand. Every virology institute, that's what it does. I personally believe, and I've laid out all of the evidence as objectively as I can on my jamiemetzl.com website, but I personally believe that by far the most likely origin of this outbreak is an accidental release from one of the Chinese virology institutes in Wuhan. And, you know, lots of countries make terrible, terrible mistakes. I mean, Union Carbide was a mistake that killed a lot of people in India by an American company. And their mistakes can be made. But then I think it's been followed up by an absolutely monumental cover up in China. I could be totally wrong. And the way that we can find out is to be doing an investigation, but China has massively and very significantly blocked that investigation. So I'd love to be wrong. And I'm a progressive. There's very little that I like about Donald Trump. I think that what his administration doing is racist, bigoted, and whatever. But it's like a plane crashes. We need to know why the plane crashed, not to point fingers, but because there are more planes that are flying. For all we know, we could have a worse pandemic that could emerge while we're still fighting this pandemic. And if there is an issue with the security of Chinese facilities or any facilities, we need to know that. And we really have to get to the bottom of what's happening as we respond to the crisis that emerged from it.
Yeah, you describe that explanation as Occam's razor, right? The simplest explanation is usually the correct one. And why, what evidence would suggest that it was the result of a slip-up in a laboratory?
So let's just look at some of the there's three options. One is, which I don't think is true, that it's some kind of synthetic biology work that was being done, whether sinister or otherwise. The genetic analysis has mostly suggested that that's unlikely. So that leaves two options. One is a naturally occurring zoonotic jump from animal to human, and the other is this accidental release. So let's take that accidental jump. Where would that have happened? If it's coming from a horseshoe bat, they don't have that many bats in the middle of Wuhan. These horseshoe bats are 1,100 miles away in Hunan in the south. And the bats around Wuhan were hibernating and I talk about this on my website, were hibernating at that time. So let's just say that that jump happened from a bat to a pangolin or a civet. It wouldn't have happened in the seafood market because they didn't have bats in the seafood market. So it would have happened to that pangolin or civet somewhere else, wherever that came from. But there isn't evidence of an outbreak of the COVID-19 in those other places. So, and when people talk about this originating in the Hunan, it's confusing, Hunan seafood market, which is in Wuhan, the Lancet in January had a report saying that there were already cases prior to the cluster from the seafood market. So what's the evidence that it came from one of the two virology institutes, one of which the Wuhan CDC is right next to this seafood market? They were already studying dangerous bat coronaviruses. Two years ago, U.S. Embassy officials visited the Wuhan Institute of Virology and were appalled, one, that they were studying these extremely dangerous bat coronaviruses, and two, that they had that their security was terrible. For then, when there were their first reports, there was this massive cover-up. Why would they do this massive cover-up? Why did they get all of these doctors to sign confessions? Why did they instruct people to destroy samples? Why did they disinfect the market before they allowed international inspectors in? Why did they block for so many weeks investigators from the WHO and the US CDC and elsewhere? I mean, it's a pretty damning story. And that's why I say I don't have any special proof. I don't have any more evidence other than what I've collected from public sources. But it seems pretty likely to me that it's an accidental leak. And let's just say it was. That doesn't mean that we need to vilify China. Countries make mistakes. But why were those mistakes made? And why was there such a cover-up, if that is the case? And we have to ask those questions. It's really important. The planes are still in the air. We need to figure out what happened, not to point fingers, but to fix the problems.
I'm speaking with Dr. Jamie Metzl, a technology futurist, geopolitical expert, writer, and a member of the WHO Advisory Committee on Human Genome Editing. And he's hosting an online event on Sunday. I'll remind you of the details of that in a moment. And Jamie, you describe this moment for the world, and I guess for your home country, the US, as a 1941 moment. And that was the year that America joined the Second World War. Why is this such a transitional moment in history?
So already in 1941, there were major cracks in the edifice of the world. There were a lot of things. There were economic problems. There were political problems. There was nationalism. The war in Europe had already begun. But in 1941, it just became clear that the world as we knew it was falling apart. And there was a huge struggle that still had to be fought in many ways. And the world was going to change. It was clear that the world was breaking. And even in that darkest hour, however, there were amazing leaders like FDR and Winston Churchill who came together and articulated a vision of a better world that could emerge on the other side of the crisis. And we haven't had a moment of world plasticity like that, like the period from in the first, you know, let's say 39 to 45 in history since then, because this world, this post-war order has been relatively stable. I think this is the end. I think we will see the post-war order as going from 1945 until 2020. So this is, in my view, the end of something. And now we need to be just like FDR and Churchill in 1941, imagining what comes next and then laying the foundations for that future world. But because we don't have an FDR, certainly not here in the United States, and we don't have a Churchill, certainly not in the UK, we have to divide up that job. And that means that everybody has to play a role in imagining and then building the kind of future that we want. So this is a very painful time, but it's a very creative time. And there are lots of people, I'm working with others on an interdependence movement that says, all right, if we recognize how connected we all are, what responsibilities does that create for all of us to think that my well-being resides in you, whoever you are? My well-being resides in the safety and security of people in the Central African Republic or Zimbabwe or whatever. And so I'm a stakeholder in those people having sustenance and education and healthcare, because if they don't, even selfishly, this or other viruses, they're gonna incubate there and they're gonna come back, and that's gonna harm me. So we need to realize that I am you and you are me. And I think we have to think differently about the world, because if we don't, we'll just wind up with new versions of the same problems.
How are your optimism levels?
You know, I'm very high, but it's, I'm sure it's just genetic. I'm sure most people would take in all of this, and I'm in the epicenter of this in New York, and it's pretty horrible, but it's like the best of times and the worst of times. I mean, it's horrible. There's so much pain and so much suffering. And as someone who really believes in the United States, and I myself am the son of a refugee, and I basically owe kind of everything to this country. It's just, it's such a heartbreak that this is America. I mean, there's another America, and we will get our country back, and we will play a positive, constructive role in the world again. But there's a lot of pain now, and it's pain all around. But at the same time, there's hope. I mean, there are new communities forming, new ideas that were just stuck for years and decades. And we had an unsustainable world on so many levels, from the personal level, the way we're consuming energy and resources, to the political level, the way that at least in many of our political cultures, we have just people pitting against each other, or being pitted against each other, even worse. And on a geopolitical level, where we haven't been able to come together to solve the big problems. So something was broken. It was cracked. And now we're seeing how broken it is. And now is our moment to fix it. And there's a race between the forces of destruction and the forces of construction. And so those of us who believe in construction, we have a lot of work to do.
And meanwhile, as a technology futurist, can you tell us, should we get used to enjoying happy hour on Zoom?
So what I'm saying on this is not a snow day. I guess you have snow days in New Zealand, but this is not a snow day. When it just snows, you wait it out, and then life goes back. Our lives are going to fundamentally change, and we're not going to get just our exact old lives back. And it's going to be a combination. Like, my brother here is a sports doctor. And the first day he started seeing patients virtually, I said, just build your, this is the future of your life. You're going to see virtual patients 4 days a week, and you'll have in-person clinic to do procedures 1 day a week. And it's never going to go back, because people who get used to seeing their doctors online, and if they don't feel it's any worse, and they can get what they need, and they can send in their tests through their iPhone or just at their local pharmacy, they're not going to want to go back. They're not going to deconstruct this whole system. We're about to have a shortage of farm workers here, and we don't even have that many farm workers. We have a lot of immigrants. So robots are going to be doing that job in a year or two, and that's not going to go back. So a lot of things, and we're not going to be in, at least in this country, we're not going to be in big stadiums watching sporting events, you know, probably until full stadiums, probably until 2022. And so a lot of these things aren't going to go back, but our life is going to be a new normal that'll have some aspects of our old lives, but a lot of aspects of the lives we're leading now.
Well, Dr. Jamie Metzl, one of the brightest minds on this topic, will be hosting an online event on Sunday, which you can buy tickets to and attend. It's put together by Think Inc, and it's called Hacking the Coronavirus, the Future of Our World. There's a link on our website, rnz.co.nz/Jesse. And Jamie is a technology futurist, a geopolitical expert, a writer, and a member of a WHO Advisory Committee on Human Genome Editing. And we've really enjoyed your time today. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us, and good luck with the event on Sunday.
Thanks so much. Really a pleasure joining you.